I'm Mary McCormick, and you're listening to Pod Clubhouse.
Pod Clubhouse.
Jack was smart. He'd mind that drama. Let it be dramatic. Improvisational. Crowds believe it most when you say what you really feel. You got chops. So if you get a feeling, lean into it. If it's not scripted as your time, seize the moment and make it your time. Make everybody else react to what you do. That's called self-determination.
This is Caroline.
And this is Mike. Welcome to the Duffy Wrestling Dirt Sheet of Heels podcast. Tonight we're talking about episode 5 of season 1 of Heels. I'm assuming it's going to get renewed, so we're saying season 1 instead of series. We're talking about episode 5. It was called Swerve. It was written by Rachel Sidney Alter and directed by Pete Siegel. He's back. He's
Pete,
back.
Your buddy.
Pete is back, and so I need to pronounce his name again.
We had some wrestling terms in this one, Mike, that I don't know everyone was familiar with. Can you give us a little background?
Yeah, again, being consistent with all of the episode titles, we should start with Swerve, which obviously is a word people know. It means, you know, you're driving down the highway and a deer runs out and you swerve your car, right? You pull it out of the way unexpectedly. The wrestling term is kind of related to that. It refers in wrestling to the sudden change in the direction of a storyline. It's meant to surprise fans. Not always, but usually involves one wrestler turning on their ally or their partner, either tag team partners, one begins to attack the other during a match, or in this case, maybe a valet turns on her man, or her man turns on the valet. You end up often joining the person who was the enemy up to that point. So yeah, it's an unexpected turn in a storyline, usually involving treachery or some kind of traitorous action where allies become enemies and former enemies become allies. I think there's a couple of ways where you see that play out in this episode.
I think so, too. Definitely within the ring and outside the ring.
Yes. Yeah, which, again, the show has done a good job of using what happens inside the ring really as a metaphor for these people's lives. I think almost every single wrestling term that we've seen here really does end up getting applied to things that are happening in their real lives. And Crystal, you know, she's complicated because she has been seeing the writing on the wall that Ace is not really into this. But this episode made clear in her reaction and how upset she was, made clear that it really hadn't fully sunk in, right? She's really caught off guard when she comes into the meeting with Jack and Trisha and Ace and Willie, and Bobby's there too, and finds out the news that not only is she being dumped for Trisha, but that, you know, it's going to be an infidelity storyline. It's going to be her fault that she's being dumped for Trisha.
I definitely felt like it gave this whole feeling of she was disposable. And I think that was the thing that kind of hit my heart, that it was like, you know, she brings so much more than a pretty face. And so then just to be able to just shove someone else into her part felt like, oh man, that can't be.
Well, that was one of my questions, because I know you have a different take on some of the storylines that come up in the show, especially when it comes to wrestling, than I do. And I think it was one of the good things about us doing this show together was I think you have a good sense of the family drama and the dramatic side of it, whereas I, you know, will bring the wrestling side to it. So I'm curious for you, how much are you faulting Jack or upset with him or not upset with him about trying to balance Ace's fragile ego while at the same time he's complimenting quietly Crystal and her skills, and he's telling her, he's like, listen, I realize what you can do now. You can promo, you can speak, you can memorize lines, and you've got fire in you. I'm going to start writing for you. So she's getting a storyline now. This is something that we get the impression that Crystal's not actually had before. It may just not be the storyline that she wants. But how do you take that as someone who's maybe not so much into the wrestling storyline aspect?
I think that it's a backhanded compliment to constantly be whispering praise to people, but then, in my opinion, disrespect them in a larger, more public forum. I feel like there's something to that really makes me like cock my head at Jack, because he doesn't seem to grasp the idea that people care about having some dignity. I mean, I think that that's across the board an issue. I need to ask you, as a wrestling fan, can you become the bad guy and retain your dignity, not be made out to be almost a fool?
Well, what's the example you're using here?
Well, I'm thinking about, well, obviously, I'm thinking about moments like Tissues with Ace, right? Where it's like you have to rip them down and make them feel so bad, and they don't get to retain their dignity. With Crystal, she's not just gone off with somebody else, but like, we're going to make you into this really nasty betrayer in a way that's beyond just going off with another partner, but we're going to kind of pull this whole, I don't know, like you're a whore, basically, you know, that for lack of a better way to say it, like just kind of strip her of her dignity in the storyline. Like, is that necessary when you go bad?
Necessary? No, but it's common. These low moments, these I can't even look at you kind of moments, like Ace with the Tissues and the crybaby, which I love Crystal brings up in her promo towards the end of the episode, or having her cheating on him. And now she's with Bobby Pinn. Those are how those heel turn moments go, those character turns go. Wrestling is not subtle with its storylines. It's very dramatic. It is scripted, but it has the subtlety of a soap opera, not high-end nighttime drama.
Like you said, I don't know if that just makes it soap opera-y, but it's like... Like, okay, this is like a silly example, but it's just like simple, right? Like, she could have left Ace and dumped him in a dramatic fashion and was going off with Bobby. But to make her out to be like this betraying whore version,
well,
like, that's what I'm saying. It's like stripping you of your dignity. Like, you have to become nothing. And I don't understand that part. Like, I don't ever look at that as like villains in like superhero movies. You can just be the bad guy. Like, you can still have your own dignity and worth and stuff and be the bad guy. We don't all have to like look at you like you're like, you know, beneath our boot kind of feeling, you know?
100% correct. But remember, wrestling is soap operas for grown men and boys. A valet in this league, there's not a female wrestling component in this league. There are only valets, and particularly, well, now I guess there's two valets in this league with the introduction of Trisha. But these are not women who are being featured for their wrestling skills. They're being featured because their asses look cute in skirts and they're adorable. They're arm candy. That is the level of their treatment here. And so their storyline is never going to be something subtle like, Hayes and I grew apart and it was time to move on. It's always going to be at this level with this storyline character. Until her role expands in the ring, her storyline is always going to be ceilinged at, I used to fuck you, but you're not man enough for me, so now I fuck this guy who fucks me better. That's writing towards the audience that's watching this, though.
It's not even allowed to be, I fuck this man because he fucks me better, right? You're like, because that's what she ends up saying, but that's not what the storyline was, you know?
Yeah,
and that's so
true.
That's the thing. It's like, that actually gives her some amount of like empowerment in that storyline, but it's not even like that. I mean, the original Jack storyline, which is what I think you were asking me, no, it puts her being thrown out like the trash. And so I'm just asking, like, do you always have to treat your bad guys as the trash in terms of dignity wise? Like, can't there be good guys and bad guys without it being like your shit, you know?
Yeah, well, you've turned the question around on me. And here's where the rubber meets the road. The storyline, the way it would play out in a real wrestling league, is what Crystal does ultimately. That's the sassy, saucy nature that people are going to lean forward in their seats, whether they're watching it on TV or watching it in the dome. And Jack knows that, but that's my issue here. He's making horrible narrative decisions when it comes to his brother because he's so walking on eggshells around his fragile ego. And everyone knows it. I mean, she gives this promo at the top of the episode. I want to just listen to it because it's fantastic.
And let me be crystal clear. We only care about one thing, and that is the DWL title belt. We are coming for it with hostility in our hearts.
I mean, that's fantastic. We're coming for it with hostility in our hearts. The crowd would go nuts at that, and everyone knows it. But because Ace is a little baby, you know, Jack scraps it. And they have a very pointed and intentional look to Diego and Rooster, who like are rolling their eyes like, why are you scrapping it? You just said it was a hell of a promo and you're going to scrap it.
But that's what makes me feel so ick about Jack, is how then he whispers to her about what a great job she did. You know, the whispering praise is what is bothering me about Jack right now. it basically makes him two-faced at the end of the day, because he can tell you like, oh, you did such a great job and you're just so wonderful, blah, blah, blah. And then 1 second later, raise his voice one notch louder and be like, yeah, we're not doing anything that Crystal just did. And you're like, who are you? What kind of leading is this? And how do you think this isn't going to breed contention amongst everybody?
He's trying to balance this and is not doing a good job. And if Ace is going to be the face of your organization where your best storylines are going to play out around him, well, it can't work if you're making narrative choices based on his feelings.
Like his real life feelings, not his feelings as a character, his real life feelings.
My guess is the reason why is he's trying to give Ace some room to grow a pair, get used to this role as a heel. That doesn't mean he has to be a heel in real life, that it's just a fucking job. Diego doesn't really wear a lucha mask outside, and Bobby is pretty much the same person in and out of the ring. But this idea that Ace still isn't getting, this is your persona in the ring because it's your job, it's what you get a paycheck for, it's what you get a 1099 from Jack for, right? He says that later to Rooster, versus who you can choose to be when you're not in the ring. And he's giving him room to, I think, still get used to that, and I think that's why he's treating him with kid gloves. The problem is you're fucking your entire rest of your organization while you're treating him with kid gloves. Rooster gets sidelined. Crystal gets sidelined. Bobby is not getting the coaching that Bobby needs. Bobby should not be in the ring. Bobby is a danger to himself and to others. He can't do a frog splash. You got to be able to do that. That is not an abnormal or exotic move. It, the biggest guys in wrestling currently do frog splashes, and they do it like, you know, off the top rope, and they jump 15, 20 feet in the air. I'm talking 300-400 pound guys do it. This guy can't do a frog splash. That's a fucking problem.
I was really surprised to see him so timid this many episodes in. We saw him be so nervous in the first episode, but I was like, come on now. You've had more matches and plenty of practice and stuff. I was really, really surprised they were going the route that he was like that scared to be, you know, quote, like afraid of heights.
I don't think that much time has actually passed. I would say in world, I would say less than a month has passed from the start. That doesn't excuse the fact that that guy should be in the dome 8, 10, 12 hours a day, one-on-one training with someone, learning how to do these things. You can't be having him do frog splashes the day of your match as like rehearsal.
Well, you know, it makes me even look back at the previous episode then and raise my eyebrow about like, why are you spending so much time making costumes and getting ice cream and doing all this stuff when like, if you can't do the most basic of moves, like, you know, like you're right. Get yourself to practice and like quit with all this other stuff. Jumping on a trampoline apparently is not going to get you ready.
Which is sad, too, because Crystal, I mean, he's wasting his time with Crystal. Crystal knows this information. I mean, she gets scolded by Ace. And I want to get into Ace, too, because he acts like a real fucking baby in this episode. Like the worst kind of petulant teenager. Predictably so. I mean, you called it last week and what we thought would happen when he saw Bobby and Crystal being together. He scolds Crystal for helping Bobby. Well, dude, I mean, he's gonna hurt you or someone else if no one teaches him. I've seen the frog splash done a million times. I would still need to someone walk me through it once I got up to the top rope.
What you said about the safety aspect of this whole thing and the trust that they have to put in each other to be in the ring, what goes down in this episode, I cannot for the life of me understand why Ace, just by like whatever standards they have anywhere, I don't even know if it's in league or if it's in each wrestling dome or whatever, why would he not be like suspended? And like, why would there not be like repercussions on like a sport level because of the trust you have to have in each other?
There's not like a governing body. Jack is the governing body, and it is up to Jack to discipline his wrestlers for breaching safety protocols.
Is it weird for me to think that there would be some standard, though?
He says, you did the one thing you're not supposed to do. You can't hurt your your opponent. Not in real life. You can't mm-hmm. snap their leg. We should be clear. So the figure four leg lock is a submission move. There are all sorts of submission moves in wrestling. You have the sleeper hold is something that people would have heard of, where, you know, essentially you get choked until you fall asleep. There are some armbar submission moves. Those don't tend to end matches. They're not considered what you call like a finishing move. And then you have leg submission holds. The figure four leg lock, which is what Ace does to Bobby here at the end of the match, is a very common basic leg submission hold. It's meant to apply pressure to the leg so that the person who it's being done to taps out because the joint is being pushed in the wrong direction. And when you tap out, the referee is supposed to end the match and your opponent is supposed to let up. What happens here is Bobby is tapping. He's tapping his leg. It's unclear whether or not Jack actually has the bell rung, because I don't hear the bell. I've watched the episode twice. I don't hear the bell ring, but Jack is definitely yelling at Ace to let go. Because, again, in the same way Jack held Ace in a submission in the first episode, which until the referee either called the match or until Ace tapped out, you know, Jack could have broken Ace's arm. That he was doing an arm submission move that if he had pulled harder would have broken Ace's arm. Ace does that to Bobby here. Now, the problem is the leg bones are extremely hard and they're hard to break. They're hard to break in this way. So for Ace to have done this, he would have had to exert some sudden and violent leverage on the leg from where it was just in the submission hold to break the bone. You don't do that by accident when you're gradually holding in someone in a submission move. So for Ace to claim at the end that it was an accident, it's not an accident. Ace was unhinged. He was in a bad mental place and he was reckless and he was wrestling someone who is too much of a rookie to have been in that scenario. Three things destined for disaster, and disaster happened.
I reject any ideas that it was an accident, just from the standpoint of it was completely in Ace's control. It didn't happen like he was flying off the ropes or someone fell out of the ring. Like there was any like outside out of control force happening. It was his hands. And it's frightening. That's where I guess I get back to, like, how could you ever in good conscience put him back in the ring? Because it was a mental accident, if you will. He had a mental break of reality and what was acceptable. If you were any other one of the other guys in the wrestling group, wouldn't you say, I'm not going against him?
Right.
Because apparently he can have an accident and break my bones. Like, no thanks.
Every wrestler essentially has an unspoken safety rating. If you dig deeper into dirt sheets or you go through interviews online or in magazines, you can get a sense of the wrestlers who wrestle very safe, that no matter what the moveset is that they're executing, like The Undertaker is this colossal, larger-than-life force of nature, extremely big, extremely strong, super violent. He didn't win matches. He destroyed his opponents. But he was also considered extremely safe. People didn't get hurt when they wrestled with The Undertaker. He always ensured his opponent's safety. And he had the tombstone, which was essentially, it was a modified pile driver, where he was bouncing you on your head. He was driving your head into the goddamn mat. But he was a safe wrestler, and so the people he wrestled with never got hurt. He ensured their safety. There are other wrestlers who are notorious for being very lax with safety. And when I talk about safety, I'm not talking about their own safety. I'm talking about the safety of the people they're wrestling. They are reckless. They are dangerous, or they're just doing movesets above their skill level. I'm not going to name names because I don't feel like getting sued or getting in trouble, but they're out there and they're known. Ace is going to have a reputation for being one of those unsafe wrestlers. People are not going to want to wrestle him for the exact reason you're saying. It's a safety concern. Rooster, who thinks so much of himself, is not going to want to wrestle an unhinged maniac who can break your leg. No.
And doesn't have the mental fortitude and control that if just some words, I mean, forget about, like, what if you slip? I mean, it could very much happen where you could land a move wrong, truly on accident, and hurt Ace a little bit, right? Or maybe your punch isn't pulled or quite as hard or whatever, right? In a way that what happens if you actually hurt him? Like, these were just words mm-hmm. that made him lose his mind. What if it was even more?
I had an episode episode theme here of the predictable and unpredictable consequences of our actions. And I think it might be worth talking about just a little bit, because there are some real butterfly wings going on in this episode that lead to Ace breaking Bobby's leg. And so I just want to hit a couple of them, and maybe you have a couple too. One is, he shouldn't have been allowed to go into that ring solely based on the promo rehearsal that Ace does in the office with Thomas and Jack. Thomas, little boy Thomas, Ace is speaking to directly and throwing things at during this promo rehearsal. If I'm Jack, Thomas's father, I'm getting up from behind my seat watching Ace treat Thomas as if he is Crystal in the ring. When he gets to cam girls and killing yourself with pointing a gun at his head,
I know,
you got to scratch that match. That is not a guy who is in the mental place to go be physical against someone else.
That was frightening. I was expecting any second for Jack to jump up and be like, that's enough, that's enough. The tension was ratcheting. And in what family do you start talking about killing yourself?
Yeah, with pointing a gun at his head. He's like,
we just had dinner 10 seconds ago talking about suicide. Like, come on, what are you doing?
To the 8-year-old.
Yes.
I mean, there's
this was crazy.
There are so many things wrong with that promo that Jack doesn't. The best he does is he kind of gives him like the settle the fuck down, like hand sign thing. But dude, that's not enough. You are destroying everything you're trying to build here because you're too scared or worried about offending this guy's fragile ego. Listen, I gotta tell you, if the DWL is only going to succeed or fail based on Ace and his unhinged personality, then you should close up shop now and go be better at your lawnmower sales job, because that motherfucker is too unhinged to hinge your entire business on.
There's a lot of hinging right now.
There's a lot of hinging. Because I got to tell you, as crazy as he is as a spokesperson and on a microphone, I don't think Wild Bill is ever breaking someone's leg. This was the thing that we were talking about last week. How unhinged or insane is Wild Bill? Wild Bill has a lot more control and it's a lot more persona than it seems.
He actually has some integrity. And that's the thing that sounds like, wait, what? Wild Bill has integrity? He would never hurt another wrestler like that. Like, to me, this is like the one and only oath you take as a fellow wrestler. Like, you're never going to actually purposely hurt the other person.
That's what Jack says to Ace in the hospital. He said, you did the one thing you can never do. And he's 100% right there. Jack, though, it's several hours too late for you to have that revelation that Ace is going to do that, though.
And you say that, but then and what? And what's the consequence for that? And what? Is he fired? Is he kicked out? Is he like, quote unquote, benched for X amount of matches or whatever? I'm like, no, nothing. There's no consequence for doing that. And we're all going to still tippy-toe around you.
Well, we know. Well, hopefully, though. I mean, who knows? I mean, that comes at the end of the episode.
Well, so, I'm just saying, right. In that moment, don't you yell something like, and you can take your bag and go home?
For sure.
Kind of thing? Like, I mean, wouldn't any boss say, take your bag and go home at that point?
You would think. Versus pinning him up against the wall and calling him a piece of shit. Like, I mean, again, it's
which
letting...
I have to point out, it was actually up against a Pepsi machine, which in Georgia seemed frightfully wrong. It feels like it should have been Coke.
Let's talk about Wild Bill, because he has a really interesting episode. This is a guy who has realized and hit rock bottom at the end of last week. You said it perfectly when you said he hit rock bottom. Wild Bill is kind of dusting himself off the mat in this episode. It starts with that crazy press conference, which ranges from never apologizing for being naked, just being naked on a plane, to the primeval cruelty of circumcision. And, by the way, I'm going to go to rehab for a little bit, and then I'll be back better than ever. What did you think of Wild Bill's opening press conference here?
On one hand, I thought, wow, Bill, circumcision, huh? That's where we're going? But I happen to also be watching Succession right now as a rewatch, and have seen quite a few press conference type things, or like getting together some sort of press like release. And the idea of throwing the conversation so entirely off track, I mean, the reporter goes, from what I understand, it's about hygiene. Like, he he managed to, you know, get all their attention and just shift it away in another direction. For that, I applaud him.
Well, he says it's a deflection, right? That's what he tells his manager, who's having a panic attack behind him during when she bows her head and goes, Jesus fucking Christ. It was really funny.
Not everyone can do that well, you know, and the way that he did it and he actually just like smoothly went from one topic to the other was really fascinating. And what makes Wild Bill the person you do want, you know, with your company, because he's got this like this just craziness that is, it kind of works for you, I guess, is what I want to say. His craziness works for him, where Ace's craziness works against him.
Wild Bill is great in this episode. I think this is my favorite Wild Bill episode, because after, again, hitting rock bottom last week and shitting the bed in a really dramatic and a horrible way with Willie, he spends this entire episode poking at the walls of the DWL. He has interactions with Jack, with Stacy, with Crystal, trying, and with Debbie, who we've seen but like gets a lot of screen time in tonight's episode. Wild Bill is like poking to see where the weak spots are. Where can he get his way back in? What did you think of his conversation with Jack? He follows him along while Jack is running. He gives him some exercise advice, but then he essentially tells him, you need my expertise to grow. I can turn some into something. He also deflects his comments to Willie about when you drink and blurt, you hurt. Which is sounds like a bumper sticker. Is he at the point of feeling bad about what he said to Willie at that point?
I absolutely think that Bill has a lot to teach Jack. And again, you know, just I'm criticizing his leadership throughout in saying, you know, you questioned it with how much he's babying Ace, but I question it in terms of protecting the other wrestlers. And this is a situation where Bill is absolutely a wild card, most literally a wild card, all going back to using our cards metaphor in general, right? He's our wild card. I don't throw him out. He is 100% someone to keep around, of course, at arm's length, and of course, knowing that, you know, he could nip you the second you turn your head. But that's the wild card element, right? That kind of makes him exactly why he's important to this group. So far, the group has been fairly predictable, but in the worst kind of way, right? Jack is predictably going to make bad choices in order to favor Ace, or he's going to do something that is better for his family, but isn't so good for the wrestlers as a group. The wild card factor, I mean, I think it actually brings in a lot of excitement and expertise that Jack just doesn't have.
I think you're 100% right. And I think this is what Willie was trying to tell him outside of Eddie Earl's car, used car lot last week. Wild Bill is an asshole for sure, but he's good at what he does. He is controlled chaos, right? He'll bluster, he'll jump up and down, he'll stamp his feet in the ring yelling into a microphone, but he's not going to get so lost in it that he's going to go snap your leg. It's sports entertainment. So you need a wild man who has an unseen leash, who knows where the limits are. When he's talking to Jack here, he makes the line, or he makes the comparison, that his conversation with Willie went beyond the line drawn in the sand because of external factors stemming from them having spent their 20s having sex and having, you know, there are other extenuating factors in that relationship, which makes it a heightened kind of experience. And that shouldn't detract Jack from using Bill to grow the little weed into the big weed, as he says. So
into the big weed. That's such a funny thing. Weed is such a funny word in like with a southern thing. It's like, it just comes off so funny.
Wild Bill never takes the most predictable way of describing something ever.
I love the way he talks. I think it's hysterical.
It is. He's quickly becoming a favorite, despite some of his more despicable tendencies. Just because I think it's so often he's preaching some real truth to power. And in this episode, I mean, he has this conversation at the end when he's in the supermarket with Stacy. There's some interesting stuff here. He predictably makes a dig at Stacy about money must be being tight in your husband's a loser. I'm an asshole in the ring, but that doesn't necessarily mean I'm an asshole in real life, though we've seen him be an asshole in real life.
Right.
But then Stacy kind of drops the ball here, where she kind of tips him off about the fair. Let's take a listen to this clip.
Now, Jack's breathing new life into the DWO, while also building the kind of family life you'll never have.
As long as he doesn't do like Tom, put a gun in his mouth, it's a win.
Fuck you, you sad, pathetic piece of shit. Once Jack lands at South Georgia State Fair tonight, he's gonna prove you wrong. Not that he fancies to impress a fool.
State Fair, huh? Ooh. That is a big stage. Looking forward to see how the Spades fuck that one up.
Which is funny. And based on all evidence, a very true possible statement.
I was more nervous about the fact that Stacey kept throwing out so much swearing. And there was that moment when her manager comes over and Bill even says in front of the manager, like, go wash your mouth out with soap kind of thing. And then she continues to swear. I thought surely the manager was going to swing back around the corner and be like, you can go clean out your locker kind of thing. Because that setup was so perfect for her to get fired. Yes. And for her to get fired because of Bill seemed like, yeah, this is where the story would naturally go. I was surprised it didn't.
I was actually surprised, too, when the manager comes over and is really like, customer is right. Not to mention, all you have to do is when Bill shows up at the DWL to buy a ticket and the way everyone's gawking at him, this guy is still a celebrity in Duffy. So for the manager to come over and kind of throwing shade at Stacey for making it look like she's making the customer clean up the broken pickle jar, and then it to be this kind of local celebrity on top of it. Yeah, I agree with you. It felt like it was being set up 100% for her to get sacked there. But it would have been her. But it would have been her own fault, though, wouldn't it? I mean, to lose her temper there.
Go slow now. Bill has a way of goading people into getting them as angry as possible. Even 100%. She says, "You don't need to talk to me, gross, to impress me." Like, I mean, he only speaks that way in order to get a rise out of you. So
true, but these are adults, though, Caroline. Though, right? Adults have to be in control and know how to not rise to the bait of people who entire this is what stand-up comics entire thing is about,
but
getting heckled.
She's not
stuff.
A stand-up comic. I mean, be
she's
real,
a grown-ass woman though. And
but what she is not is somebody who throws around the F word. And so I really was like, this writing at this point with this language that she's using doesn't really match her. Like, she's being really severe with her language in her workplace, in public. We haven't even heard her really talk that way in private.
Yeah.
So I'm like, where is this all coming from? But all I can think is Bill has this energy that he puts off that if you're on the receiving end, you apparently give it back on that same level.
It's the negative goo, right? From Ghostbusters 2. We were just talking about on another podcast, yes. One of the Christmas podcast episodes we were just doing. It kind of, it feeds and it feeds and breeds based on that negative energy. For sure, Wild Bill brings that side out of everyone. He gets in the ear of Crystal in this scene, which I think, again, is a great scene of interesting advice.
Well, I'm not Ace's valet after tonight. Script has me getting dumped because I was caught cheating.
Shit. Jack can be so short-sighted, protecting the feelings of his mad child brother. In my day, these things weren't so scripted. Sleek's got some buzz because he went off script with the Duffy screw job on Ace. Jack was smart. He'd mind that drama. Let it be dramatic. Improvisational. Crowds believe it most when you say what you really feel. You got chops. So if you get a feeling, lean into it. If it's not scripted as your time, seize the moment and make it your time. Make everybody else react to what you do. That's called self-determination.
Put your hair back and make it your time. That's not bad advice. But you also see how he's poking the walls, trying to sow chaos and discord so he can get himself into within the walls of the dome. It's really interesting.
I see that, but I also see him doing, like, poking the situation in a way that he can take credit for moves that work. So I don't necessarily see it as just discord and chaos as much as, like, if Crystal does something awesome and it ends up working, then she's going to become a supporter of Bill. So it, like, brings him in, you know, because the more inner people you get supporting you because you gave good advice, he's going around and doing the same thing Jack is doing, whispering in people's ears, but he's doing it to a larger end where he doesn't then humiliate them later, you know, in front of everyone else. Right. So Jack has part of that as a leader, but he undermines himself.
When he shows up and everyone they do that kind of slow-mo montage of everyone staring at him like he's like a celebrity, and Ace sees him while he's signing autographs, and he's like, I gotta take a leak, and he gets up. While Bill doesn't chase after him, while Bill doesn't chase after anyone, he's like, all right, you're gonna go. I've lost my in to you, and so I'm gonna call you a big blubbering man baby. and I'm going to go sit next to your valet now, and I'm going to talk her up. You're like, Wild Bill never loses a step. Really, nothing puts him back on his heels.
He just pivots. That's the great thing about him, you know? But that is where a good leader actually comes into play. Now, does Bill have that other side of him that is so unpredictable and so insane that you can't put all your eggs in his basket? Absolutely. But on the flip side, he knows to like keep at it. He's so tenacious. You know, I give him a ton of credit for that.
And it works, right? So like, he's kind of like Loki, right? This trickster god who sows chaos to better and further his own goals. And so he gets in Crystal's ear here, tells her, you know, put your hair back, go, if it's not your time, make it your time. Seize your moment, lean into it. And by the way, I love when he says crowds buy it more when you're saying what you believe. So in wrestling, that's a wrestling term. It's called a shoot. It's when real life bleeds into the wrestling or into the promos. When two wrestlers truly hate each other and they begin either fighting or exchanging words, and it's based on real life animosity, there's a chemistry and a vibe and an electricity to those moments that can never be fully replicated when it's just being acted out or just words on a script being said. That's what gives her promo such heat when she's giving it. When she puts her hair back and gets into the ring and takes the mic from Ace, and she, well, this is a little bit of the promo. Let's listen to it.
I have a confession to make. Ace Spade, I've been cheating on you with Bobby Pin. But that's not my confession. My confession is, I'm not the least bit sorry about it. The thing is, Ace, you can't satisfy me. I need a man, not a crybaby boy.
That promo goes on for 2 minutes, but that's the beginning part of it, and it was pretty good. Does Bill know that whatever he says to her is going to lead to Bobby's leg getting broken, leaving the ring open for him to go in there and get a mic and do his own promo? No. Ooh. I can't think he's thinking that many chess moves ahead, but I think he's probably thinking it's going to give me some opportunity to do something.
Yeah, I mean, that's where I'm going with the idea that, like, you know, even if it's just that Crystal follows his advice and feels great about it, and then, you know, says, hey, I think Bill needs to be more a part of things. Even if it's just that, you know, he gets someone on his team on, you know, hashtag Bill, right? He needs to start making inroads with some of the individual people in the organization. But you're right. I mean, I guess as an old timer, could he foresee that Ace would get rabidly angry and that things could go crazy wrong and he could have an opening? I don't know if that's so far-fetched.
I think he very much can predict it's going to goad Ace into doing something stupid, which will maybe give him an opening, right? Because he knows Jack is putting all of the DWL's eggs in the Ace basket. Just from talking to Crystal about when she confides in him that she's getting dumped tonight, you know, for cheating kind of thing. He even says, you know, Jack is just so short-sighted making these choices to protect his brother's feelings. So he knows that crack in the armor is there. And though, so getting Crystal to do this exploits that, which he can definitely predict is going to open some kind of door for him. The fact that it leads to Bobby's leg getting broken, I want to know, where's the consequence lay there? Is it with Crystal? She should have known better that by goading Ace so hard and he's so fucking unstable that it may lead to something like that. Is it on Jack for creating the situation overall and not stopping the match earlier or stopping Crystal earlier? He lets her go. That promo's like 2 minutes, because I went to pull it. It's just short of 2 minutes that she's in the ring. He doesn't stop her. He doesn't pull the ring from her. He's the referee in the ring, and it's his league. He lets her go, though.
That's a lot of questions, because I think that it goes to this like sort of larger idea of, you know, do women ever poke the bear when it comes to a man, and then he does something outrageous, and then everyone looks at her and says, well, you're the one that got him all riled up. Isn't that the exact word? You got him riled up. Mm-hmm. That's almost the phrase that's thrown around. But at the end of the day, everyone look at the man at some point, shouldn't we, and say, I'm sorry, shouldn't you still control yourself? Like, this is your professional job and your only job, Ace. This is out of control. Does some responsibility fall on the quote-unquote ref who happens to be Jack in that situation? Yeah. I mean, he's the one who has the complete power to start and stop everything. And he's the one that started the ball rolling. He's the one that created a breakup storyline. In what world is no one angry in a breakup?
Well, Bobby. I mean, Bobby's making out actually pretty good. Well, until it's like it's broken.
No, in a breakup.
Who's
not angry in a breakup storyline? Everyone's angry in a breakup storyline. So didn't he already create the atmosphere for there to be a problem and for things to get out of control? And he knows very well that they have a personal relationship outside of the ring that he's also affecting.
Well, he hears the promo. He hears how angry, and he can't believe his brother is that good of an actor. So when he gets so angry that he's throwing papers in Thomas's face, like he's picturing Crystal's face on Thomas's body. How's that not a red flag for Jack to be like, you know what, actually, let's do something else tonight, because, you know, but can he though, really, at that point? You've got the fair people there, you've got the steel cage being set up. He's also kind of stuck by his own creation at this point.
I mean, at that point, you're right. No, the wheels are already turning. He has done what he has done. But I think it is absolute chicken shit that when it goes off the rails, he blames Crystal and Crystal alone. Now, any good leader knows that at the end of the day, whatever happened is his responsibility or hers. But in this case, he puts the, you know, crown on his own head all the time and says, I call the shots. I say what happens. And then yet blames the actors of his play when things go off the rail. That is the shittiest leader I have ever heard. You take credit when things go good and you blame when things go bad. Oh, fuck you. Get off the throne.
Jack is seeing Ace's face turn sour, but yet still lets her go on for the 2 minutes of promo. Why?
Because it's a good show.
It's good fucking talk. I mean, she's giving the crowd is getting exactly what you want, right? This is the conversation about getting pops and getting heat. She's getting the reaction. And you know what? She doesn't give a shit. Boos and cheers are the same to her, which is what Jack has been trying to preach to his brother. Crystal's the one who gets it. Ace doesn't. So he lets her go because it's good fucking wrestling. It's what people are there for. They're invested. If they didn't give a shit about what she's saying, they'd be silent. But they care. So that's why he doesn't stop her. So for then him in the middle of the match to get on his knees to go scold her about this is why you don't change things. A little disingenuous there, Jack. Like, you let her go. You knew why you were doing it because you should have been doing it from the beginning. She knows what's going on.
Additionally, I think that it's really convenient that he suddenly doesn't understand or doesn't grasp Crystal's desire to be a part of the storyline in more of just this truly treating her like a whore, that she's just like bouncing from man to man. I feel like whispering to her about how great she is at promos and building her up like that and being like, you do so great at this, blah, blah, blah. And then having her go and do something that's so big and grand and really like splashy like this. I'm sorry, what did you think was going to happen as well? Like, talk about riling someone up. What did you think was going to happen if you told Crystal that she was so awesome at this? You know, like, I mean,
right, you were, I mean, honestly, he's whispering to her the same thing that Bill is telling her out on the dock while he smokes. Like, you've got chops. You're good at this. And you know what? So she seizes her moment versus doing it on Jack's time. But again, Jack doesn't stop her because he's listening and he's like, it's pretty good fucking shit.
But then Ace freaks out and you get mad at Crystal.
Exactly. Exactly. Like, right. Jack, why isn't Jack lifting him off of, or honestly, he should have kicked him in the goddamn head as the ref.
I thought so too.
Guest referees always interfere in matches. That's why wrestlers who appear as guest referees are there. It's a whole trope in wrestling. When the wrestler shows up a guest referee, it's because they have a vested interest in the match that they are now the referee of. 9 times out of 10, they end up interfering in the match.
Okay, that makes so much sense, because when I saw Jack wearing the referee uniform, I was like, I don't understand. Is the storyline like he's going to burst in onto this match? Because he has to, in my mind, you know, as just the more generic watcher of this and not like, you know, a diehard fan. I'm like thinking, well, that's my cue that he is going to intervene in the match, because otherwise, why is he wearing this quote unquote costume that he's a neutral referee when he's not, you know?
And the problem is that he doesn't stop Ace and the figure four leg lock until it's too late on Bobby. And honestly, he should have. He gives Ace too much credit to be able to show the restraint that he himself showed to his brother. You know, Ace forgets that. Like, yeah. Jack could have broken his arm back in episode one and didn't. He could have, but he didn't. Jack gives too much credit to Ace to have that same level of maturity and control and impulse control. Ace does not have any of that control that Jack does. Jack is a professional. Ace is not. Ace is all personal feelings and immaturity. It's a problem. It's a problem for Jack, and it ultimately all, I think, comes back and lands right at Jack's feet. I don't want to leave Crystal yet, though, because there's two things we haven't talked about. We see her bet her entire paycheck from the gas station to buy a new uniform for herself. Is this an isolated problem? Is this signaling like Willie's cup that she's never without that we're already worried about? Is this something to put a post-it note on that we have to watch this gambling habit? Or do you think it's like a one-time isolated incident that she's got control of?
I was surprised that we went that direction and felt just like Willie. Oh, okay. She has a vice here. Like, they're finally revealing something about Crystal here. And a little bit more understanding of, like, how does she have the things she has around her? I mean, when that paycheck was $100, I was like, wait, what? Like, how is this working out? They've yet to show us any other family that live in that house with her.
Yeah, that's why I think she lived alone, right?
Yes, but that doesn't make any sense. Like, you, $100 paycheck, how are you keeping the lights on?
Well, remember when Big Jim has his baby? She's in uniform at the hospital. So I got the impression she was also working in a hospital. I think she has multiple jobs. That was, I guess, my point.
Well, she had the delivery bag when we saw her when she came home from when the kids were jumping on the trampoline. I feel like she had like a delivery bag or something with her, too, which made me be like, OK, so she works at the gas station, which we knew from the promo last week because she was like, I have to work a shift here now. And then it seemed like she was maybe delivering food or something at some point. And then, yeah, if she was like, you know, at the hospital, then maybe she was working there, too.
Right.
Obviously, when they go to give her a baby.
Yeah, she's hustling. So I think that's the only way. Or she was like left the house, maybe. I mean, we don't know anything. I mean, I
don't know. But that's where the betting thing makes me wonder, like, is this how she tries to make ends meet? It definitely smells of like people who buy lottery tickets to try to, you know, somehow augment their income through lottery winnings. You know, there's something here that is worth, I think, putting the pin in it and saying like, okay, is this going to come back to haunt us or what?
I told you that episode when she comes home and after the Ricky Rabies episode, she comes home and she has the Diet Coke and she sighs with her hands on the counter. Man, right from that moment, I was like, I gotta know Crystal's entire backstory. There's something fascinating going on in her private life that I am very curious to know. And I think Kelly Berglund just continues to do a great job kind of building this character.
I feel like maybe her, like, a parent or somebody's in jail. That's I'm gonna throw that out there because it has a feeling of that house is, it's hers but not hers, and also like trying to keep it together and keep it going in a way. I could see a real parallel between her and Mama Spade. Somehow someone has been like removed from the situation who maybe was a part of helping keep that money going. And so maybe since it's only a short period of time in theory we're dealing with here, like I'm really curious about as if she had a life previous to this with a lot more stuff going on, like Jack with dad was there and all this stuff. And we're just coming in when his life is like all in upheaval. It feels like there's probably some more upheaval that happened recently with her, because it doesn't make sense that she could afford what's happening here by herself.
We got to do a little episode of Caroline's Fashion Corner because I have no sense of these things.
Oh, I'm so sure. You did a whole fashion show with me. You got fashion.
What do you think of this new outfit, this new little sassy cheerleader outfit that she spends her hard-earned bedded money on? And then does your heart break for her a little bit when it gets ripped after she, after we know how much it took for her to actually be able to pay for it?
Well, my heart absolutely broke when it ripped because I was like, Trisha, you fucking suck. You know, like you come in street clothes and like she obviously has this entire outfit going on. I thought it was cute. I don't know. I thought it was cute. I mean, there's a lot worse things that valets have to wear, I'd say. So, I mean, I thought it was cute. I didn't have any issue with it.
Neither did I. And I think it was funny.
I mean, it was fun.
When the episode opens and she's given that promo and then she's out of the ring and Willie comes up to her. I have in my notes here, Crystal can promo like a boss. She's all nips and sass. Willie comes up and tells her that she has to go get herself a new outfit and maybe a bra this time. No nipples. It's a family show. I was like, I don't know. I feel like a lot of people would be okay with that outfit. In the ring.
Definitely. So. I find it fascinating. The role of the valet and the family friendly, you know, line that they feed and just a lot of it feels very hypocritical and very like, Willie, what are you talking about? Like, yeah, family friendly, I guess. But I mean, I don't know why being able to basically be wearing a glorified thong is okay, but like nips are not okay. I don't know. The line is very fuzzy for me.
It's very, very fuzzy. One thing that does seem like it may happen and I'm excited for is that the introduction of Trisha makes me feel like Willie maybe is going to ease up on Crystal or maybe, you know, even be a little more human to her. She's the one who comes over and patches up her arm and she shuts Trisha down pretty hard about you're not going to do a goddamn thing when you're out in the ring.
Yeah. Well, patches up her strap on her outfit for sure. Yeah. And so, yeah, I think it aligns their interests. When you have like a third party enemy, you guys are aligned. I don't think that Willie agreed with bringing a complete noob into the situation. That's the thing that I have a struggle with. And we're talking about it with Bobby Pinn, but like, how are you just going to have Trisha introduced like 30 seconds ago? And she's like going out to do a show.
A very important show.
Yes. There's such a lack of professionalism in a way that feels like I thought you guys really pride yourself on doing things in a certain way, but then at the same time, not at all. I can't quite understand. Maybe that's part of the thing of being like a scrappy lower rung league is that you're striving for this professionalism, but the reality is you're throwing people in there who you don't know what they're doing all the time, I guess, right? Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think Crystal agrees with you. When she and Bobby and Willie go down to that little storeroom, that locker room to do their scandal pictures, before they get into it, Crystal unloads on Willie a little bit and says, like, what are we doing with this Trisha? Like, we're just going to have her go do matches? Like, what the fuck? Willie's answer is not really an answer at all, is Jack has instincts and we follow them. Willie, well, fuck. I mean, you've been around this business longer than Jack. And, like, you're supposed to be the Jiminy Cricket here. The business sense Jiminy Cricket. Like, that's not a great answer. Because I don't know how great Jack's instincts actually are. They seem to suck a little bit, actually.
Well, and just getting back to like the safety and the sort of the most basic parameters that we have within wrestling, it really seems like having even a valet who doesn't have a clue what's going on seems dangerous. Like, it seems like she could be in the wrong place at the wrong time for a variety of reasons. The wrestlers are coming out of the ring. They are standing on the edges. Like, she could actually get somebody hurt because she's completely out of it as to what's going to be happening.
Right.
I know that might seem a little bit like a stretch, but to me, the way that they are both using a script with some dangerous moves that have to be done safely, but also improvising on some level and talking within the ring. I mean, everyone has to be in on it. You know, like, I kind of go back to like a Broadway show, like everybody from the lighting guy to the ushers beyond just who's on the stage has to know what's going on so that they're not in the way or getting themselves in some way, you know, just in trouble with the show production in general. So I don't know. I wish they would pay more attention to the bigger picture.
I mean, I think you make a good point, because think about when Jack is fighting Ricky Rabies. One thing is wrestlers do go outside. We even saw in this episode that, you know, sometimes wrestlers wind up in the front row. Sometimes they wind up in the laps of the audience. But think back to that match when he's fighting Ricky Rabies and they go outside. Vicky, the valet, Crystal 20 years down the road, or Trisha 20 years down the road, rakes his eyes. Now, that's a wrestling move. That is a practiced move, the raking of an eyes, where the wrestler has to sell it. But you have to make sure you don't actually scrape or gouge the person's eyes out, right? Vicky has been doing it 20 years. She's a valet, not a wrestler, but she's been doing it long enough that she can do that safely. Now, if someone like Trisha's watching videos and she's like, oh, good, I can like scrape Jack's eyes, I'm going to do that. That's going to be fantastic. Well, she could really hurt him or hurt whoever Ace is wrestling if she tries to get in on the act, as I am using that in air quotes. sense.
I think it'd be kind of funny if they did have her get her like kicked in the head or something.
Well, I'm saying that she can hurt someone, right? If she tried to go
could, but she could also just get in the way.
Yeah. I mean, well, and I'm happy that Crystal actually calls that out in that meeting where she's very finding it very hard to keep it together. She's very hurt. She's, you know, trying not to cry. And she says to Jack, she says, well, I was supposed to distract Bobby when he goes to the top rope. Are you going to have her? And she kind of says her like she's like a gross mound. She says, you know, are you going to have her do it? And Jack, at least Jack has the decency and the intelligence to say, no, I'm going to do it now. Like, I'll be the one who distracts him now. So at least Jack had thought through a little bit and is really not going to. She's really just there for decoration, it seems, at this point. But still, crazy. At such an important match. It's not like a house show where, you know, you have the state guys here, but you're having a steel cage match. Steel cage matches are big events. Like, that's always going to pack in people more than just a regular Sunday night in Duffy.
Well, it was good to have these extra Georgia State Fair people, which I need to mention, it was the South Georgia State Fair. I didn't realize they did like regional state fairs. Texas is a big place. We only have one state fair. The whole idea of like, what is a steel cage match and everything? Well, we have these newbies to come in and tell us more about it. Did you like that device? Was that cool by you?
I mean, I think there are certain terms and concepts that the show does well to give us exposition about. You know, I go back to episode one with the kayfabe, right? Which was the name of episode one and describing that because it's such a core concept to wrestling and to the personas of wrestling, which is so much what this show is about. So I don't really have a problem with that. But maybe people don't know what a steel cage match is. I mean, you could Google it just like the Jeopardy guy does, right? The guy, he says like, oh, I looked it up. I think they set it up within the show to be believable. These three people who don't know anything about wrestling, who, by the way, clearly enjoy themselves. They are super into it the entire night, are looking stuff up and trying to explain it to themselves.
I love when they were like, how have we not been to this something like this before?
I know.
That was such a great vibe.
They have a cut to Constance where when Wild Bill is talking about how he loves Duffy for the food, fishing, and fornicating, they come to Constance and you could tell she is like into it. She
That's because like, I told you about those Duffy men. I get I know, it. I know. It's probably on their town sign.
It's on their calendar for sure that is being made for you specifically right now. January is Mr. January is Wild Bill and his penis. So
do not be peeling back the layers for me. It's supposed to be a good surprise. Shh.
Peeling back the layers like circumcision.
Oh God.
Let's talk about Rooster because we actually had a little break from Rooster last week, but Rooster and his issues come roaring back. Let's start with Rooster and Diego. There is all this talk where Diego is just sick of listening to Rooster bitch. And so he says, if you want to win the match, win the match. I don't give a shit. Like, one, he says, I want you to be happy. You're my friend. I don't care about making Jack happy. I want you to be happy. Is that crazy for Diego? Like, did that seem out of left field that Diego would have that kind of attitude that we could change matches just to make my friend happy?
I was surprised that he was so dismissive about his relationship with Jack. Now, they haven't shown any relationship between Diego and Jack that we need to feel like they have some sort of camaraderie. But I didn't know that he was so quick to be like, whatever. Because we know where Apocalypse stands and we know where Rooster stands. But I guess I didn't know where Diego stands. Turns out, really doesn't. He doesn't really care.
Right. He just wants to wrestle.
Yeah, he just wants to wrestle, which is great. Rooster, he did surprise me about this match, but I get it. I understand why he chooses not to change it up. Because he wants it to be the storyline. He doesn't want to snatch it because it's happening live and he can just do it because he has, you know, the control to be able to change things on the fly. He wants it to be sanctioned that Jack is given his blessing and that this is it. And he is going to, you know, have this time to shine. You get the difference. Like, I mean, you can snatch it and run away with it. And everyone's like, wah, wah, you got it. But you want it to be like, no, we are giving you the belt now. Like, you have earned it. He wants it to be like that. He wants there to be that sense of gratification that he's been waiting for.
I mean, I think that's a great explanation, and I think I'm inclined to believe with that. So on the heels of that is this explanation that Jack gives Rooster at the end of the match, almost cutting Rooster off before he can get into all of his issues. Jack kind of cuts him off with this...
What's my name? Rooster. What's my real name?
DeAndre Milton Rutherford. I know your legal name because I pay you by check and I give you $10.99. You go by D to your family. And you go by DA to your friends, which I know because you're always talking with your fucking speakerphone on in the locker room. And like I said, your stage name is Rooster. Now, I know that things have been crazy around here, but please, please, please do not make me out to be somebody that I'm not. I'm not a man who doesn't know your name. I know all four of them, and I'll call you anyone that you want me to. Tonight was about respect, recognition, and success for everyone here, which clearly includes you. So this time tomorrow, if there's anything that I can do to alleviate these frustrations that you're clearly having, I will try. And your moment in the sun is going to come.
And he goes on to thank him for being awesome in the ring that night. Is that sufficient praise for Rooster?
Well, I was relieved that Jack knew his name. I was scared he didn't know it. And so I was pretty nervous there. I appreciate that he went into all the details about, like, you have the speakerphone on and all this stuff, because really that was so much more about the, you think I'm out of touch with what's happening in the locker room, or you think that I don't hear things, but I do. And I think that that was an important message to get through well beyond just knowing his name. I just think Jack's full of shit. He isn't considering Rooster to be, you know, the guy who's going to get the belt next. And I understand why Rooster feels like enough is enough for me. Like, when am I going to get my time? How do you feel? I mean, should Rooster continue to stick it out? Should he have to keep just being given this, like, over and over? And bigger than that, you and I have, like, brought it up. Why, oh, why can't Rooster follow Apocalypse's actual advice, which was to schedule a conversation with Jack? Why does he keep trying to have these, like, right during a show, like, behind the scenes?
Right. Again, even in this episode where Diego and Rooster, they stop him while Jack is having this whole thing with Ace and Crystal and the steel cage and the ending, which is not set yet. And Diego says, is that a sure or is that a sure? Like, no, I don't really want to talk to you about now. Well, you see, he's doing something here. Like, I agree. No one, they still haven't sat down to have a meeting. For God's sakes, Ace goes into Jack's office constantly to talk to him.
Well, and it's clear. I mean, they had a clear sit down meeting between Ace and Trisha and they brought Crystal in. Like, they have a mechanism to have conversations about changes. I mean, it wasn't just, you know, this blustery talk of Apocalypse of, will you just schedule this meeting with Willie and everything and Jack? I mean, we've seen the meetings. They exist. Rooster, why are you not having them?
I feel like we're supposed to feel that Rooster is 100% in the right here because it's been going on for so long. But again, every time he tries to approach Jack, he's really picking, like, the worst times for Jack. And maybe the lesson there is that Jack isn't emotionally available for his wrestlers because there's never a good time. But you're right. He had a meeting with Trisha and Ace and Bobby and Willie and Crystal. So there are meeting times that goes, right? He has meetings with the Earls. He's got meetings with other people.
And he's there all the time.
And even with that, Jack gives a really thought out explanation and thank you and acknowledgement of, I know who you are. I like that he says, don't make me out to be a person who doesn't know your real name. I think that's really a super important line that Rooster needs to hear, because I think that's a real concern of Rooster, is that I am really invisible here, as invisible as I was in all of the other indie leagues where I didn't get my shot. I think they're both wrong. I think Jack should feel the writing on the wall that he needs to do something with Rooster, just because of the amount of times that this guy is coming up to him. Like, Apocalypse and Diego aren't coming up to Jack constantly and trying to get his attention. Just Rooster is. And so Jack should be like, I need to deal with this sooner rather than later because this is going to become a thing. But Rooster also still hasn't done it the right way.
That's the whole thing, though. Feeling like he's like a gnat buzzing around kind of thing. And it doesn't feel like it actually does need to be dealt with. It feels like you do what you do with a gnat. You swat them away, right? But you don't, like, set traps and, like, get the fly swatter going and all this stuff, right? You don't do that because it's just a pesky gnat. That's the problem. Like, his approach is so just, like, low-key annoying and not actually sitting down like a professional adult person with another professional adult person that I don't feel like there's any actual push to deal with him. You know, that's where I think he's going so wrong here.
Yeah, no, I agree. And the problem is he thinks that he's handling it correctly. He thinks that he's actually going above and beyond trying. I mean, he shakes Jack's hand there and he seems satisfied when they part ways. Like, he takes the praise from Jack. The look on his face doesn't seem like you're full of shit, guy. You know, he seems like genuinely kind of mollified, but we've seen him be mollified before. 10 minutes later, he's like, I'm not getting my shot kind of thing. Like, I've tried talking to the guy. No, you really haven't. Again, you've just keep picking the wrong times to talk to him. So the problem is, because he's not feeling like his concerns are being addressed, even though Jack says here, come tomorrow and I will do my best to alleviate your concerns. You know, he's not going to come tomorrow. He's going to say that he did it already. You know, we haven't seen it yet, but you know, Rooster, you got to still think he's got that posted up on the wall. We've got a posted up on the wall about him talking about Charlie Gully and his Florida wrestling dystopia.
It feels like we're getting closer and closer to some sort of move being made, because they've made Rooster just background noise at this point. I mean, we're not even really, like, when we go to him and he's talking about this, even as a viewer, it feels like I'm doing the, like, wrap it up, like, come on, you're not saying anything new.
In his head, though, it's him making all of these attempts. You know, when he tells the story to his friends, it's going to be, I made all of these attempts to talk to Jack and I kept getting shut down and I didn't get anywhere and I never got my push.
And it's like you're trying to look at yourself within a vacuum, too. There's obviously stuff going on with this battle of the Spade brothers that you're like, I'm just not being given my push. And it's like, are you not paying attention that there's an entire storyline that's being played out within your organization right now? Like, you can't just wall yourself off and say, well, I just don't understand why I'm not given a push. Well, because they're actively playing out another storyline. It's actively happening. It's not right. Like they just are starting a new storyline over here and they didn't pick you.
Yeah, exactly. And these wrestling storylines, they don't come up and get resolved in a week. And again, I think we're probably only about a month worth of showtime, not much more than that. Wrestling storylines go on for months. You know, they don't come up and get resolved in a week. You introduce a thing, you build the thing up, there is the big clash, and then sometimes there's additional fallout from that, and then you go on to the next storyline kind of thing. It's complicated. I see why he's still frustrated, but at the same time, he still isn't helping himself in the way that Apocalypse advised him. I think the last thing that we really need to talk about here is Thomas. Little Thomas Spade actually has a big role in this episode because he's kind of like Watu the Watcher, right? He is everywhere in this episode. He's picking up everything. He is being brought into the inner circle of the DWL in a way we hadn't seen in this episode. I mean, he goes to the pitch meeting.
I was very surprised at that.
How did you think he equated himself there? And what did you think of his description of why people keep coming back week after week?
We'll play it for us first, and then let's talk about it.
But how do you keep the fans excited when none of it's real?
It's a story. Like, a real story. Like Ace. He's the hero, and everyone loves him. Because he's just, like, a good person. But then he lost to my daddy. And he just couldn't take it that he was the loser. So then he became a heel.
A heel?
Yeah, a bad guy. And now he wants revenge. Like, he's really mad, like really, really mad at my dad to prove everyone was wrong. And you go to the show and you're just like waiting to see what he's gonna do. Is he gonna remember he's a good person? Or does he care too much about winning? That when the ref has his back turned, he's gonna do something like kick my daddy where the sun don't shine.
I wish I could tell you that I wrote that for him, but my scripts are rarely that concise.
I love the joy of a kid explaining wrestling with the maturity of talking about the larger world metaverse of it.
I think it was important for these three to hear this from somebody who was not trying to, like, take their money, if you will. You know, I think that there is something to hearing it from a fan's mouth. The fact that it was a little guy is just extra cute. But, you know, when you hear it from a fan who's really excited about something and they really tell you it passionately in a way that you can understand. I mean, he sold the entire thing. I mean, I hope Jack understands he got the state fair because of Thomas.
He looks at him with a lot of proud eyes. So I think he does really appreciate what Thomas did there. And maybe that was part of Jack's plan. Maybe Jack figured this is a kid who's going to be able to sell the joy. Because he preps him a little bit in the car on the way out there, after the gerbil talk. But it really just says, just tell him about, you know, it's good family fun. But Thomas goes above and beyond just saying, it's a good family time.
which is hilarious. It's good family fun. Like a little kid would say that. Right. It's good family fun. What? You know, hey, we can't skim over that gerbil talk. That moment when he's like, you can have a gerbil. I was like, oh my God. Did he just say that?
And for people that missed it, because it actually happens pretty quickly right before a hand job is given. So maybe people aren't paying attention to the words coming out of Stacy's mouth.
I feel like old Jack isn't thinking when he's in that bathroom what he's even agreeing to. I mean, obviously, Stacy has like a couple things, but that is a really good time to tell some things, what you need done and get some agreements going. And she lays it out there, you know, no gerbils and no like junk food, basically. Those were the things I can remember. Definitely no gerbil, but also like a don't eat cookies and crap too. You know, I thought he heard her, but I don't know if he did or if he didn't. But here, I feel like he just went against her. I feel like he did hear her. Do you feel like he heard her, or was the blood all outside of his head at the time?
Well, I mean, based on her reaction, the blood had largely left his head.
So then do you give him a pass that he didn't really hear her?
No.
Or is he going 100% against her?
No, he's going against her because we've seen this pattern before. I would be more inclined to give him the benefit of the doubt that he's not really listening to any. I mean, he even says, like, this is not arousing when she's, like, giving out, like, the laundry list of do's and don'ts for Thomas. I would be more inclined to give him the benefit of the doubt if we hadn't seen him. She says a thing and then he goes and does the exact opposite of the thing later on. We've seen this behavior in the first five episodes a bunch. It's like her main gripe with him is that she says things and he just goes and does another thing. I mean, no gerbil, no junk food. He immediately caves to the gerbil request and he's giving him money to go get a chocolate bar. And Thomas even protests. He's like, mom's going to be mad. And he's like, I'll deal with your mother at the end of the episode kind of thing. So yeah, that's the kind of thing. Like maybe he won't find out. Maybe Stacey's not going to find out about the chocolate bar from the vending machine, but she's going to find out about the goddamn gerbil.
What do we think about this? What are we supposed to think about Jack as a man? As a husband, as a partner.
I mean, his priorities as a partner are not great. He seems so caught up to me. He seems so caught up in the big moments of being a partner and being a provider. And he's super caught up in his own shit and his own bullshit that he says is for the family. But at the end of the day, it's really for him. That he misses all of the important little moments. Hearing your wife say no gerbil is an important partner moment. It's one of those small things that makes a life, right? Life is not made up of big moments, right? It's made up of the little moments, and listening to your partner on the little moments, like we desperately need milk and then you don't show up with milk. Like that's a little moment. That's what life gets made up on. That's what the people remember when they talk about you fondly when you're laying in your casket. It's the little moments. It's because
well, I think it builds whether they trust you or not. They may not remember the little moments, but it 100% builds whether you're like a loyal, trustworthy person in the family, right?
Right.
But man, I really lost respect for Jack in that gerbil moment. Thomas wasn't even really whining for it. He just asked. Why, Jack?
Yeah.
Why?
It's like you see this all the time with divorced dads who throw money at their kids when they get time with them as a way of like buying their love. It's a really common theme with like not dads who are like splitting custody, but like who only send their kids like every weekend or every other weekend. They tend to almost go exclusively towards tangible items as signs of affection. And Jack is picking up on Stacy telling him you're not spending enough time with Thomas, like teaching him how to play soccer or just being there. And he's interpreting that in a way that says, I'm going to get you a gerbil because that means I'm a good dad. That's not what Stacy's trying to point out to you. And it doesn't make you a good father because you know what? That fucking gerbil is going to be dead in 2 weeks. And what are you going to do then when Thomas is crying his eyes out? You're going to go get another goddamn gerbil?
No. You know, it was such a King Tom move in the regard of, I am going to create a mess that somebody else has to clean up. You know, like now we're going to have this gerbil who someone's going to have to like shop for food and clean its cage and do all this stuff, which is certainly never going to be Jack and unlikely to be Thomas. So not only did you just like just go against what your wife said, but you also just gave her additional work to do. I don't know. I don't know how you feel about Jack. I know in last episode you were really singing praises about how you just like really think Jack's a really a cool guy kind of thing or whatever, but I am really, really feeling different about him.
It's tough to root for him as a partner. It's tough to defend him as being a good husband, and honestly, as being a good dad, because these are all moments that are rife with disaster written all over them. To say nothing of the fact of the disrespect that he's showing his wife. Then, and there's no other way to say it, by immediately caving to the. But you're right. The weakest of demands for a gerbil or request for a gerbil. After your wife has expressly, I mean, of all the things she could have given him that she wants done before she jerks him off, the gerbil was the first thing. So clearly it's important to her. And so for him to go about it immediately, literally 20 minutes later, and cave on the demand, 20 minutes of real time, like 3 minutes in like showtime, is super disrespectful for her. It's like she doesn't matter at all. And that's a problem for me. So
it's really changing my opinion of Jack. And I mean, on the heels of the hand job business, which I have to ask you, I don't know. I really have a lot of questions here because I feel like they are going out of their way to include sex moments in every episode. And I didn't know if that felt earned. Or if it just felt like, well, you know, formulaically, we have like wrestling scene, talking scene, in someone's house scene, sex scene, da 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 da, sex scene. Like every single one has had like at least two. Somebody's going to be naked in every episode. Like, what do you think about this? Did it feel natural or did it feel like what?
We've seen them and we've seen Stacey be particularly turned on by Jack in their bedroom when he either comes in from working out or they have the conversations with church and stuff. And like, this is a couple that has sex. It is the thing that seems to be the thing that they agree upon the most. Even after 9 years of marriage, they're still banging regularly. And Ace, as Jack's brother, also very sexual. I imagine King Tom probably fucked a bunch. Like, I think the world that they're in, they have high libidos. These are alpha males.
They're Duffy men.
They fuck, they fish, they fornicate. My issue with this, and what made me feel a little squiggly, was I can't get Vicky Rabies advice out of my head from that episode where she's talking to Crystal about take care of your man and he'll take care of you and take you along for the ride. And Crystal interprets that advice as she's going to go fuck Ace, you know, to calm him down. She's going to give him the back rub, right? She's going to please him and pleasure him to make him happy kind of thing. And I feel like that's a little bit of what Stacey's doing here. Like, he's nervous because he needs to seal the deal with the Georgia State Fair. And the response is, I'll calm your nerves by giving you a hand job. I don't know. I mean, that doesn't really work for me. I don't like that. That seems like sexual favors for, like, we should be able to deal with our emotions and our nerves without having to ejaculate, you know?
Putting it that way actually gives me be like, well, maybe it wasn't such a bad idea. But I just don't think that, like, I'm sorry, Stacey, didn't we just deal with a fire? And aren't we, like, angry with each other? And didn't I just have to sleep at your mother's house? I'm just giving you a hand job just because it will help you feel better. Like, I'm feeling a little like, Stacey, what is going on here, girl? Like, this is what I said, is it earned? Like, have they shown this couple actually feeling like they want to be sexual towards one another? You've been in relationships. I've been in relationships. Come on now. I mean, don't you get in a mindset where you're like, I'm pretty frustrated with you. I'm pretty pissed at you. I don't know that naturally goes to hand jobs.
Well, I mean, she was so happy with him with maybe getting the fair. You know, I don't. It's complicated. The whole thing made me feel squiggly. Like I wasn't crazy about
it. Squiggly, but that's such a funny word. Like
squeamish. Like it made me feel squeamish. This wasn't just
That's where I'm saying it felt out of place. It felt unearned. It felt like I don't see how this couple is at this place right now.
Okay, so I felt squeamish about it for a different reason than you.
Okay.
Not that it was unearned. I think these two do. I think they have sex at the drop of a hat constantly at times when they probably shouldn't be having sex and they should be doing other things. I think even through their fighting, they still are having sex. I didn't like it because it seemed like a weird...
Like servicing him?
Yes. Yes. Okay. Like, oh, honey, you've got nerves. Let me jerk you off. That whole thing, it sets up a relationship of where she is of service to him, a servant to him, a valet to him. She's putting herself into a Vicky Rabies role here. And I don't think that's healthy for anyone. And by the way, that fosters an environment where Jack can treat her like shit because she's just like a service attendant. She's not acting like a partner here. She's acting like a servant to him.
There's even something to the whole, like, him standing in front of her, essentially looking at himself in the mirror while she's, like, blocked behind him, doing, like, a reach around. The whole act.
Well, because that's so he doesn't come on her shirt.
It erases her from the situation.
For sure.
This relationship is messy.
I think it sets up a very bad dynamic. And I think it's a bad dynamic that we already are seeing played out where he doesn't respect her. He doesn't listen to her. He doesn't acknowledge her and her words. She's not helping herself by jacking him off because he's in a place where he needs service.
I feel like she should have handed him the lotion bottle and been like, go to town. I got to get to work.
And he says, if I land the fare, I'm going to reciprocate it twice to you, twice a day for a week. Okay, he says that, but he also said he was going to deal with the squirrel problem.
And like, I'm sorry, she should get reciprocation, period. Whether or not you get the fare, whether or not, I don't care what. Like, what are these weird strings attached to them? Like, if I do this, then I'll give you that. You do this for me, and I'll give you that. Like,
reciprocity, she says. Wow. I expect reciprocity. I mean, she should be demanding it, whether he's getting it or not. I whatever. I but
this relationship was very different when it started out.
Yeah. No, it's problematic for me. That whole scene just left me kind of feeling very uneasy, especially then on the heels where he agrees to the job. Literally, the next time we see him, he's going against her express wishes.
Yes. Like talk about being like just throw her out with the trash. Like, what?
What was the hand job for? She wasn't getting the thing she wanted out of it.
And writes the script that Crystal's a whore. Wow. You really treated the women in this episode amazing.
Not great. What do you think, as we leave, let's talk some predictions here. Thomas sees his father holding his idol, the guy he worships, Ace, up against the Pepsi machine and runs off. Willie tries to draw this fact to Jack's attention and says, you got to go deal with your son or else I'm going to call Stacy. That's a huge threat, I think, coming from Willie to do that. What does it say about him as a father that Willie has to be giving him parenting advice? And are there going to be ramifications for what Thomas saw there?
I think, yes, there will be ramifications. Again, I have serious question marks about how they're painting Stacy at this point. She is either a whore or the mom who's going to discipline everybody. There's like very little in between here in a way that makes me feel like I don't understand what's happening. Like, why are we using her in this way? I don't like it at all. And for Willie has strange relationships with women. I mean, we've very much documented that with Crystal.
But is it just a commentary on how bad a dad or how bad a job Jack is doing as a dad that Willie feels that she has to say that? That was kind of where I went with it, I think.
I think it does all come back to Jack at the end of the day in terms of if he was doing the things he was supposed to be doing and acting responsibly, no one would need to call or tell anybody anything. So, yes, at the end of the day, yeah, the buck stops with Jack across the board.
You'd like to think that if he was acting as a leader and the owner and employer of Ace in that moment, he wouldn't have to pin him up against the Pepsi machine and call him a piece of shit. He would say, you're suspended. Go the fuck home. I don't even want to see you. You broke this kid's leg, this rookie. And you know what? Wild Bill, when he says Ace may have very well ruined this guy's career, this rookie's career, he's 100% correct. You can't find fault with that. What Ace did here, snapping his femur, is gonna probably, very possibly, ruin any career Bobby would ever have.
Which is sick and so, messed
so
up.
So Jack needs to say to Ace, don't pin him up against the machine and call him a piece of shit. He needs to say, go home. I don't want to see you. You disgust me. You're out of control. You're suspended. You know, and yes, will he still have to explain to Thomas that what what Ace did was unacceptable. Yeah, he absolutely would, but at least he wouldn't have seen his father being violent towards the guy that he considers his idol, right? Even at the dinner, explaining how his uncle had made a heel turn, he still says Ace is a great guy. I mean, this conversation Thomas has with his father before they show up, he's like, why did you make Ace a bad guy? He's a good guy. And Jack has to say, well, you know, we're all good guys. You know, we're just pretending to play bad guys kind of thing. Thomas is not seeing. He understands a lot of the business, but he doesn't understand the nuances. What Willie says, right? So he sees his father being a villain and his uncle, you know, maybe not being a villain. He's got some work to do as a dad here.
This goes back to the entire question that we had back on episode one, separating reality from fiction. I don't know that it can be done without it getting really, really messy. And if adult men can't figure out what makes them a good guy, if they're playing a bad guy and they can't retain their sense of self outside of a storyline, I don't know how you would expect a little kid to be able to separate the real story versus the fake story and telling him, oh, this is just fictitious on one hand, but then you're in a hospital and your dad is like physically beating up someone else. Like, where is the line? Like, when are we quote wrestling and when are we just fist fighting in a you know, in a hospital? Like, it's like, that's not fiction.
Oh, I mean, and that's underscored and bold highlighted by the fact that the state fair people call right after that moment. And Jack has to play it off to them that Bobby was faking. He was just selling the injury and that the whole thing was just part of the show, that it really wasn't a catastrophic broken leg situation that Bobby suffered. So,
and with that overlay of like having Bobby doing in surgery during that conversation.
Right. And you know, I like the fact that Willie has a dampened reaction to Jack, who's you know, first thing is, we got the fair. And she's kind of like, well, that's great. You know, she didn't even say that's great. She's like, okay. But she's still thinking like, dude, you got to go prioritize your kid. Your kid is upset. It's the middle of the night. He saw a guy get hurt. He sees you trying to beat up your brother. Like, you need to go have some priorities. And the fair, as great as news as that may be, is not the priority at this very moment.
Going back to the original thought with Stacey and the job and the family life and how this is all going to work, obviously bringing Thomas around the business was a patch that they thought could work when she's going to work. And well, then Thomas could just go with you, but not really thinking through the idea of like, what is the business and how could this go in a way that is going to be Thomas friendly? And we've seen him. I mean, whether it's having to sit there through that promo, even though he didn't look scandalized when, you know, we had Ace doing that promo practice on him, he didn't look scandalized.
No, he turns to his dad and says, that was really good, Dad. Like, he gets big parts of the business.
But does he belong there? Should he be on the receiving end of even a fictitious speech like that? This is going to continue to, I think, mess up the family dynamic here, because at the end of the day, Jack is such a blamer. You know, if he's going to blame Crystal for Ace breaking Bobby's leg, I think he's going to blame Stacy getting a job if Thomas acts up, because it's going to end up like, well, he had to come to work because you had to go get a job. Like, he doesn't see where he plays the role.
I think you got it in one. That's exactly how it seems it would play out in his world psyche. So I don't know. I feel like everything is crashed. I mean, we got 3 hours left and I feel like everything is coming to a head in a dangerous, dangerous way.
I'm excited about the state fair. I really hope we get to see a lot about that. I hope things don't get too crazy in any other direction. I really hope that we get to see the state fair and how that all plays out. Do you think they're going to lose it between now and the finale? Will they retain the state fair?
I think they're going to retain it, but I think it's going to be a complete shit show.
Yeah.
Rolling into the state fair. Yeah, I think I think when that train comes to town, it's gonna look like a hot fucking mess. So
I don't think there's any other way with this group, right?
That's the only way they know.
This is Caroline.
And this is Mike. Thank you for listening to the Duffy Wrestling Dirt Sheet Heels podcast. If you wouldn't mind heading to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts and rate, review, and subscribe. While you're there, you could leave us a 5-star rating. That would be great so that we don't have to snap your leg and make you feel bad.
Oh, that was so gross. I had to turn my head. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening. This has been an original Pod Clubhouse production. Pod Clubhouse is a podcast network dedicated to encouraging collaboration among podcasters and friends to bring a fresh voice and diverse perspective on a wide array of content. Please visit and leave a comment for us at podclubhouse.com. Rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast feeds on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You can find us at Pod Clubhouse. Our DMs are always open, and we'd love to hear from you.